everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's October 2019, and you're listening to episode 145 on being an old apologist. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Stephen Mizell, who is an assistant professor of humanities at Scarborough College in Fort Worth, Texas. Stephen has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called On Being an Old Apologist, Reflection on Cicero's On Old Age, and you can read it for free at our website, equip.org. Stephen, it's good to have you on.
Yeah, thank you, Melanie, for having me.
Well, this is a very interesting topic because obviously, you know, people know that we're starting to have an aging population. I'm speaking of the United States. We're having a lot of what's called baby boomers that are aging. But it's really interesting. I was reading this New York Times article recently that I came across, and the author had gotten off the subway and spotted an ad on the subway wall, and it was for like a food delivery service. And this is what the ad said. It said, "When you want a whole cake to yourself because you're turning 30, which is basically 50, which is basically dead." So I guess really our culture in the United States, and maybe in a lot of Western cultures, is very focused on youth and, you know, young people and just that whole kind of beauty and those kinds of things, how we associate things like beauty with youth. And so I'm really excited to talk to you about your article today because I don't think it's something that we consider very often about being a Christian and being older, although the Bible does talk about what godly people look like when they're older in terms of their character and their wisdom and things like that. So given all those things and just some things I've come across recently, what motivated you to write this article about old age?
Yeah, there's a number of things that sort of motivated me, but really I think it has to do with the fact that since I teach the humanities, I spend a lot of time in old books. And I've found that old books, I just like old books a whole lot better than new books. So there's one thing. Another thing is I'm actually fortunate enough to have both sets of grandparents alive. Well, recently my grandmother passed away, one of my grandmothers, but both of my grandfathers are still alive and one grandmother's still alive. And I like spending time with them and hearing their stories. They come from a different time, a different age. They know things that we just don't even talk about anymore. But I think probably the biggest thing that motivated me to write this article was something I actually experienced with my wife's grandfather. He passed away about 10, 15 years ago. And he was in the Navy, got in the Navy right towards the end of World War II. And stayed in the military working for the DOD for the next 30 years. Now, he was the kind of guy that would look at you really hard and try to assess you before he ever sort of let you know who he was. But he and I, for whatever reason, seemed to click. And he told me stories that were just fascinating. And so every time we'd get together at my wife's family, I'd sit there and talk with him, sit in the rocking chair and talk with him and just have a great time. Well, this is rather sad, but I actually, heard, one of her family members say to me, "Oh, I'm sorry you got stuck talking to Papa again." And it kind of struck me as strange because, I enjoyed the stories that he has. I was just surprised at the level of experience that he had, the amount of wisdom that he had. And I found it strange that somebody would think that would be a waste of my time, something very boring. So once I kind of, had that happen to me, I sat back and reflected on, okay, what is it about being old that everybody just thinks is so bad? And I'd asked that question and, thought about it and then just kind of tucked it away for about 10 years. In the midst of teaching humanities here at Scarborough College, one of the books that I ran across that I wanted my students to read was Cicero's On Old Age. And I had heard about it, but I never read the book before. So anyway, I picked it up, read it, and thought, yes, this is something we need to cover in class. But then the kind of things he talked about were not the kind of things you'd expect. You would expect him to say something about how old age is something we must endure, something that's a time of difficulty. And he does kind of say those things, but he really doesn't talk about the problems of old age so much. He spends more time talking about how you can prepare for the problems of old age, which kind of leads him to talk about old age in a way that we're just not accustomed to talking about today. And so as I was reading that, I thought, you know, I probably want to write something on this. And it dawned on me that, you know, we have, in the apologetic world, we have several that are getting older in the apologetic world. There's going to be a new generation of apologists coming along pretty soon. But I've thought about, you know, what made these guys that are getting older and about to go off the scene so influential? And so I kind of wanted to bring Cicero's reflections on old age to what it means to be an apologist, mainly because I saw connections between the two.
You know, that's something interesting that you're mentioning about like the age of apologists, because as I was thinking about this topic, I was really thinking through who are well-known apologists, and they are definitely of a certain generation. I would say a lot of them are probably like some of the really well-known ones are older than 60, which isn't like old, you know, when we're talking about 80, you're talking about your grandfather who is older. But at the same time, it's a certain generation. It is the baby boomer generation. So there will be coming up new apologists that are even like millennials who are basically in their late 30s now. I know we talk about millennials a lot and, you know, in our culture, and I looked it up recently, it's like the oldest millennials are almost 40. So, you know, there's other apologists that will be coming up, you know, that are a couple generations behind these baby boomers. So that is really interesting, because I was wondering to myself, who are the next generation of apologetic voices? So that's an interesting point that you're making there. Well, tell us a little bit more about this particular book by Cicero on old age. Like, for example, why did he write it?
Yeah, the Romans were... there's really no one nice way to say this. The Romans tend to copy a lot of things. I'm sure somebody can make a case that the Romans were original in their own ways, but most of what I see is they take what is good from other cultures and kind of turn it into something Romans would like. Well, I say that because Cicero, writing the book, uses a dialogue form like Plato does, and he uses a couple of old sort of patriotic Romans from the past. Well, he starts the book, though, with a dedication, and he dedicates it to his friend Atticus. Now, given some of the descriptions he have in there, scholars have tended to think that Cicero is about 62 years old. His friend Atticus would be a couple of years older, probably about 65, 66. So he wanted to write something to his friend on, you know, the common sort of stage of life that they have. He specifically says he wants to help. He wants to write it to help lighten the burden of old age, which I found kind of fascinating because it's once you've kind of gotten old, it seems to be harder to sort of lighten that burden. And I'll get to that a little bit later, maybe. But it seems, given what we know about Atticus was he and Cicero had a very deep, meaningful friendship. But Atticus was more or less a scholar. He devoted his life to studying the Greeks and philosophy and trying to be a good citizen. And so it seems when you read the book that Cicero is really trying to reaffirm the life choices that Atticus has made. And because of those life choices, it seems that the advice he's going to give about how to lighten the burden of old age is really not so much advice, so much as, you know, edification or encouragement. And so once you kind of get into the book, you realize the focus of it seems to be that, you know, how can we be happy when we become old or when we reach old age? And once you kind of look at it like that, it's, yeah, he's writing it to his friend Atticus, but he's really writing it for readers beyond his friend. He seems to be writing it to Atticus, hoping that it'll be left behind for the next generation. And he actually says that, you know, we can be happy in old age when we've cultivated what he calls the principles and practices of virtue. Because those principles and practices of virtue wind up bearing fruit in the end of our lives. He sees your life as a long sort of process of sowing seed that then brings forth a rich harvest depending on how studious you were about cultivating that crop. So yeah, I mean, it's a rather fascinating thing to think about, because he's talking to a friend who's already old, but the audience seems to be for either Atticus's children or just the next generation after Atticus, or maybe he's just using Atticus as a way to address the young. And when I say that, it kind of brings out that the book's not about how to help old people bear the burden of old age. It's more about how to help young people think about becoming old.
So obviously this is not a Christian book, and you did mention that, you know, as part of your job, you look at a lot of older books. So why didn't you look at maybe a more recent work? Because, it, you know, in the last maybe couple centuries, or a Christian work? And why this particular book? What about Cicero's thoughts on old age did you want to amplify?
Yeah. I kind of mentioned before that, you know, what sort of motivated me about writing about old age, and, you know, mentioning my grandparents, mentioning my wife's grandfather. And, you know, I've got other stories. I think I have in the article, I mentioned one individual from Florida, which is where I'm from, who last I checked was over 100 years old and still speaking in churches. And I've just wondered, how in the world can somebody be that old and still, you know, going that strong? And so it just, you know, I kind of would every now and then check on things, you know, what is it? How do I be old, if that makes any sense? How do I, as a young person, think about, you know, getting older? And so I just kind of did some informal research, nothing serious at the time, but, just little things that I would find, would be more of like advice on, how to stay busy when you're old. It wasn't on how to sort of bear the burdens of old age. It wasn't about preparing for old age. It wasn't about, how to, you as an older person can contribute. It just, most of the things I ran across were just things like, so you're an older person, what can you do, to sort of keep busy? And there really was no goal it seemed to be tied to. It wasn't to keep busy for a particular goal. It was just to keep busy so that you can just be active. Which when you get down to it, is just, we're going to stay busy just to stay busy. And so that really kind of bothered me. And so when I tried to look for some other works on this, I, to be quite frank, I just didn't find any, nothing beyond simply the, so you're older, what can you do and to stay busy? Now that work may be out there. Maybe I've just missed it, but I've just not seen anybody address, old age as a stage of life that's tied to every other stage of your life. Except for Cicero. Cicero seems to be the one book that I found where he treats old age as an integral part of your life and vocation, that somehow getting older is not the end. Getting older is more of the crowning achievement. And to be honest with you, when I've looked at the book of Proverbs, because it has a lot of things to say about old age, the book of Proverbs talks about, for instance, you know, gray hair being a crown, a crowning achievement in your life. It's the crown of righteousness, it says. And you know, obviously I don't think it's meaning something like just because you have gray hair, you're righteous. I think what it's trying to say is that what's supposed to happen when you're older is that as you gain that gray hair, that's a symbol of all the things that you've acquired, all the wisdom that you acquire, the prudence that you've acquired, that you can pass on to the next generation and teach the next generation on how to be righteous, how to be wise, how to be prudent. But that means that your time as an old person is, well, tied to the rest of your life. It's not time to just pass by and just to keep busy. And Cicero is really the only work that I found that treats old age like that. Now, again, there may be that book out there that doesn't treat old age as just a phase of life that you just pass time. Maybe there is the book out there that tries to show you how your time as an old person can be meaningfully attached to your life and vocation. But to be quite honest with you, I just haven't found that work. So it may just be that why did I write on Cicero's on old age is just because that's the only work I found that dealt with that topic in any substantial way.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Steven Mizell, and he has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. It's called On Being an Old Apologist, Reflections on Cicero's Old Age, and you can read it completely free at our website, equip.org, because our website is not under a paywall. And at our website, you can support us in a couple of different ways. One is to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. You can do that at equip.org. But secondly, if it's not in your budget For some people, it might not be in your budget to subscribe to the journal right now, and that's okay, but we would like you to give us the gift of your time. Just take a few minutes to rate and review the Postmodern Realities podcast. We'd be so grateful, because when you rate and review us with a written review or a starred rating, or preferably both, you help other people find our content out there. There's people searching that don't believe in God who are looking for material that talks about the existence of God. Or maybe it's a Christian who's looking for answers to how to answer the latest cultural apologetics trending sensation. So we've answered a lot of those things through this podcast, because we're almost up to 150 episodes. So please rate and review us. Go to wherever you get your podcasts, or you could go to, for example, Apple Podcasts, search for our podcast, Postmodern Realities, and you can rate and review us there. But like I said, our material is not under a paywall, and so you can access so much of it. And I know that a lot of you expect it to be there, and you know that it's content that you can trust, and you appreciate the fact that there's so much there that you can access, whether it be videos or audio or the Bible Answer Man broadcast or the Hank Unplugged podcast with CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, or this podcast from the Christian Research Journal, Postmodern Realities. It's all there for you, not under a paywall, free at equip.org. So we'd appreciate it if you would partner with us, either with your time for a review and a rating for our podcasts, or with a subscription. Now, another way you can partner with us would be to give us a tip. And a tip could be something just really small, like $3 or $5. That could be the cost of, for some people, a lunch out or a coffee drink, or maybe $10 is something that you can fit into your budget right now. And you can find that tipping link on any of our articles that you access, but you can also find it very easily at the landing page of any episode for Postmodern Realities. And you might be there right now, because we do stream every episode right on each landing page. So if you're listening to this maybe through your podcast subscription service, you wonder how you get to the tipping. It's really easy. Go to equip.org, go to magazine, there's a click down menu, and just click on PMR podcast. You'll get to the landing page of every single podcast episode that we've ever done. You can click on this one for an old apologist or any of them. Scroll down a little bit and there's a link for you to be able to tip us. And we just want to thank you so much, because we are not able to do this without your prayerful support and your support of your time to rate and review us, and also your financial support through a subscription or through a tip. So thank you so much. You mentioned at the beginning of your article that there seems to be a connection between apologetics and ethics that, you know, becomes more apparent as somebody gets older. So can you tell us why you think that is? Why wouldn't there be more of a connection when you're younger?
Well, to be honest with you, I think there is a connection. The point I was trying to make is that the connection becomes more apparent when you're older. Now, this is kind of a difficult thing to say without sounding a little insensitive like this, but I mentioned, for instance, in the beginning of the article that the stereotype of old people, and this stereotype obviously doesn't hold in all cases, but I think I use the phrase crusty, cantankerous complainers. and of course, I'm being a bit facetious about that. But at the same time, I mean, I think we might all know someone who's older who's just a crabby person. The kind of person you don't want to be around, and you wonder, what in the world, I mean, what do they have against life? Well, I wonder sometimes if that's just, if that just goes to show you that at this particular stage in life, because of a number of different reasons, the character that you've developed in your life now becomes much more manifest to people. I'm at the stage in my life to where I'm starting to not care about what people think anymore. Everybody tells me that's because I'm getting older. I'm not quite sure, but I could see how if it is part of getting older that you just don't care about what people think anymore, then it seems like the sort of facade we all put up in front of people to sort of interact with people and to give a good face, all that seems to be removed when we get older and people start seeing what we're really like. So all I mean by that is that I think the connection between apologetics and ethics becomes more apparent as we age. I think it's already there all the time, that your lifestyle and your apologetics are linked quite a bit. Now, also, it's not me forgotten that, you know, Cicero's book isn't a book on apologetics. It's a book on ethics. And so it's specifically about developing character, and really the kind of character that prepares you for old age, that readies you for old age. And so many of the virtues he mentions in there are things that, like, for instance, prudence and wisdom and an eagerness to learn. Well, those are the same virtues you need to have to be a good apologist. I mean, an apologist has to be prudent in presenting a defense of the gospel. I mean, has to be wise and understand the questions and understand where the other person is coming from that you're trying to build a case to defending Christianity. Honestly, I mean, I find if an apologist isn't eager to learn, he may not even be a very good one at all. You at least have to know what the issues are from a non-Christian perspective to be able to respond to them. And that requires you to be constantly learning about that. And so those virtues that Cicero talks about developing a good life are the very, in many ways, very same ones that we need as apologists. And so, but if they're virtues, I mean, they have to be something we develop throughout our entire life. And so if we're going to develop the kind of character, to be a good apologist, have these kind of virtues, we have to start doing that when we're younger. In fact, I mean, Cicero makes a point of saying that if we don't do this while we're young, we're not going to be ready for old age. So he mentions, for instance, I mentioned the guys that are the older people that are crabby and cantankerous. He actually talks about that a little bit in there. You know, why are some people like this? Why do they complain all the time? Cicero actually goes so far as to say, well, perhaps it's because the vices that they had in their youth have been carried over into old age. And the problem is the vices of youth, well, you can't, to be quite frank, fulfill those vices when you're old because the body's starting to shut down. The body is starting to decay and things just don't work like they're supposed to anymore. But unfortunately, just because the body shuts down doesn't mean that necessarily your character somehow changes. It may be that now you have a vice that you've carried over from youth, maybe an incessant desire for pleasure, that once you become older, you can no longer fulfill, mainly because you're tired, the body just doesn't want to respond like it's supposed to, and so you wind up in a situation it's rather tragic that you have a vice that's demanding it be satisfied with no real physical ability to do it anymore. And so perhaps that's one of the things we see with older people is that are crabby and cantankerous is that you see the vice being displayed by the fact that they just are crabby and cantankerous now. It can also be too that as you get older, that the virtues that you develop in your early life now manifest themselves better. I mean, I'm sure we've all met people, older people that are kind, give you the shirt off their back. They seem to have wisdom even beyond their years. They tend to usually temper the enthusiasm of the youth in a very good way to keep the youth from doing something very stupid, to be honest with you. I have to think that what you're seeing there, again, is they're getting older. They're not concerned with putting on a false facade. And so what you see is their genuine character. And I think that genuine character is something you develop or start developing when you're young.
Well, in the article, you mentioned that Christians should not be ever retiring from defending the faith. And you allude to the fact that Cicero says that old age is not a time for retiring, which is kind of an interesting thing for him to say since this book was written BC. So that's a long time ago when you think about, you know, just issues that people think about now in the United States, like should you retire or what's an age for retiring? So, you know, that we shouldn't be retiring perhaps. So do you think personally that there's some kind of issue with retiring when you become older? Is that something that people should do? Or what's the context of the whole concept of retiring from Cicero's point of view?
Yeah. In Roman times, you could be retired from politics. So for instance, some younger person or one of your rivals, especially a political rival, could bring charges against you or something and run you off. But there was apparently during that time an attitude that's, you know, at some point you just kind of move off to the countryside and enjoy your estate and retire and just don't have any connection to the society anymore. Now, the Romans didn't think that was a virtue at all. I mean, the Romans, if anything, they gave to us with a sense of citizenship and responsibility to our community. So it wasn't an ideal, but it was a thing that was talked about, it seems. And Cicero wants to, if you're familiar with his history, I mean, he was sort of retired from politics, by his own volition, but he was kind of pushed out a little bit. But at the same time, he does not see his time on his estate as a time to just relax and enjoy just pleasures. It's still a time of work. Now, kind of fast forwarding to today, so let me make sure I'm not misunderstood. I'm not suggesting that planning for retirement is somehow unwise, you know, preparing for it. For instance, I knew a guy in North Carolina who was a pastor for many, many years. I believe he was about 70, I think, maybe 65, 70, somewhere around there. He got diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And of course, that's something that's, I mean, it can be managed, but it's just not something that's going to be, it's going to hinder his ability to be a pastor. So he eventually got to the point where he had to retire from being a pastor. He couldn't, physically do the abilities as he needed to at that time. However, he didn't retire and then just go off somewhere and do nothing. He retired from that particular job only to then take his vocation and apply it somewhere else. So I think that example kind of shows you he was prepared for retirement. He was prepared to be able to support himself should he not be able to have a job anymore and bring an income. So yeah, I think planning for retirement is a good idea. So having like 401ks and saving up for when you're going to be older, that's extremely wise and that should be done. But in another sense, I do think there is a problem with retiring as a mindset, specifically that mindset when we get to a certain age and we just stop working, we just stop contributing to society and look for ways to pass the time. It always has fascinated when I've run across people like that. They work and then they say, I've only got a couple more years to retirement then I'm done. And I have so many questions when I hear that. One is, well, how are you viewing your job? I mean, is it just a job or is it a calling? And especially if they're a Christian has a sense of calling for whatever they're doing. And so if it's just a job and you're just going to shut down at 65 and stop contributing, then I just have to wonder if you've not looked at your vocation, your job correctly. So I've got that kind of question. I've also got the kind of question what do you think about what it means to be old? Do you think that that's just a time of, depression and a time of sadness and a time we just don't, it's just horrible. We should just somehow, it's a necessary evil we have to deal with, perhaps because sin's in the world. But in whatever case, it's not something to look forward to. I wonder about that too, because if you go back prior to our just the middle of the last century and keep going back, you'll see that old age wasn't thought of that way. Now some cultures still preserve this idea that, the older you get, the better you get. And of course, if you get better, you obviously have things to contribute to society. And that's personally what I think. I mean, the older somebody gets, the more valuable they're supposed to get. Now, of course, there's a lot of things that have to take place for that to happen. I mean, you could get older and become useless, more useless to society if you haven't developed the kind of character that would make you more valuable. But generally what's supposed to happen is that as you age, you acquire experience, you acquire wisdom, you acquire prudence. I mean, and then you pass those things on at the very least to the next generation. Or if anything, maybe you have become much better at your craft as you've gotten older, so that now you're putting out masterworks instead of just, something like a younger person might do or someone who's learning how to do their kind of craft. But again, I'm not saying that retiring is a bad thing. Sometimes we just have to do it for health reasons. Sometimes we certainly need to plan for it because none of us know the future and what that's going to happen. But I mean, having the mindset that I just stop working and stop contributing to my society and stop doing anything as a Christian because I get older, I really don't think that's consistent with, Christianity. And Cicero certainly didn't think it was consistent with being a good Roman. I mean, one of the one of the things you were supposed to do as you got older was be more involved in politics. Why? You're older, you were wiser, and we need, you know, the Roman society needed wiser, more level-headed guys to run the Senate. So yeah, I really don't think we should be retiring from our vocations. I think that it's better to prepare for the time that we may not be able to be useful because of health reasons or whatever. But at the same time, we shouldn't have the mindset that I just stop contributing to society when I'm older.
A little bit ago, you were talking about the connection between apologetics and ethics that becomes, you know, more apparent as someone gets older. So I want to go back to that and ask you if you are suggesting that the better apologists are ones that are older people. Is that true based on what you were saying about the connection between apologetics and ethics that becomes apparent as somebody ages?
No, not necessarily. I mean, as I mentioned just a minute ago, it's supposed to be the case that as you get older, you have more to offer. But of course, that just doesn't happen automatically. If it did, then we wouldn't run into some older people that are crabby kind of people. No, it's something you have to work at. So I can't just say just because somebody's older, they'll necessarily be better. And of course, in this case, a better apologist. But I wonder if it might just be the case that for an apologist, I mean, someone who is really wanting to defend the faith, and if he's developed these, he or she's developed these kind of virtues that would make him or her better at defending the faith, if it just won't always be the case that the older you get, the better you'll get. Now, there's a number of other factors involved there. I mean, it could be, you know, talents are involved, the kind of gifts that we have. I mean, it may be that some people are extraordinarily gifted and they are able to offer a lot to our society and have very keen insight on how to defend the faith. And they may be able to do this at a very young age. I mean, so we don't need to somehow just think that just because somebody's young and inexperienced that they have nothing to offer and may not be very good. But I think it's just wise for us to, for younger, to think, the older somebody is, I should at least have a default position of, that's the person I should really listen to. Now, you may find out that this person isn't worth listening to because, you know, they're crabby, they're cantankerous, they haven't developed the virtue like they should. But I don't think you should just write them off just because they're old. It should generally be the case that the longer we are Christians and the older we get, the wiser we get, the more prudent we get. Obviously, we're becoming more experienced. It's supposed to be we keep maturing in the faith. And if you keep maturing in the faith, surely that's going to have some benefits for defending the faith as well. You become more subtle in the way you defend the faith. You become, in many ways, you become more charitable in the way you defend the faith. But again, that only works if we become a certain kind of person. And a lot of the qualities I mentioned, like for instance, wisdom and prudence and experience, are things that you can't really have when you're young. You have to wait until you wait to acquire those, and by that time you're older. So you could be a very knowledgeable young person. You could be very well read on the current arguments. But I mean, there's a difference between being well read on an argument and then, of course, knowing how to defend it and what's the wisest course of action, what's the most prudent course of action. And a lot of that comes with just experience that you acquire throughout your life as you age. So in one way, I am suggesting that the best apologists are old. But in another way, I'm also suggesting, too, that if you are a younger person who's very talented in being an apologist, I would, you know, think of yourself as a professional musician thinks of their craft. Professional musicians generally don't just settle for being successful in the moment. They want to develop their craft and become better. And so it should be the case that by the time a musician gets, you know, very old, as long as they're able to still control their body, they should be, you know, much better than they were when they were younger. Same thing with an apologist who's very gifted when they're young. You know, don't settle for the gifts that you have at that moment and just say, okay, this, I'm obviously more talented than everybody, and so I'm on top of my game, and that'll be it. No, you know, see that as a way to, you know, you've been extraordinarily gifted. See what better things you can do with those gifts. And so that when you become older, you're, you know, 5-10 times better than you were when you were younger.
In your article, you talk about how Cicero highlights various virtues that we need to age well. And those are, you know, the virtues that we need to defend the faith in an excellent manner. So what are those particular virtues, and why do you think that those particular virtues for living well translates to the same virtues that you need for defending the faith as a Christian apologist?
Yeah, I probably should have mentioned this before, but I'm using virtue in a very old way, the way Cicero is using it. So when we say that somebody is virtuous, you know, generally we kind of mean somebody, oh, that's a morally upstanding person. They're a good person. They do the kind of things that you would expect an upright, you know, pious sort of person to do. The way the word virtue was used in the classical antiquity was much broader than that. It obviously included what we would call moral characteristics, but it included other things too. So to give you an example, when the first time that's used, I'm drawing a blank right now to remember where this comes from, but it's talked about in the context of a knife, you know, a virtuous knife. I mean, it's, you hear that, you know, what is the virtue of a knife? Well, that's really kind of a strange thing to think about, given how we think about virtues. Well, the word virtue just simply refers to effectiveness at accomplishing an end. So when you're talking about the virtue of a knife, you're talking about its ability to accomplish its end, and its end or its purpose is to cut. And so obviously a virtuous knife in that kind of sense would be a sharp knife, not a dull knife. So sharpness would be its virtue and dullness would be its vice. So when you take it, when you talk about virtues with inanimate objects like that and then apply it to, for instance, us, you're talking about characteristics or habits that help us to achieve our purpose. So that's what virtues are. Just simply the characteristics that help us to achieve our purpose. So whatever our purpose is, that will dictate what is a virtue. Now, for Cicero and for many Christians too, at least part of our purpose is to be rational, to be rational creatures. And all that means is that we exercise our rational capacity. It doesn't mean you're an expert in logic or somehow read deep books or anything like that, or are really smart. It refers to that faculty that seems to set us apart from the rest of the animal kingdom. You know, the rest of the animal kingdom doesn't think about math. They don't ponder the deep questions of life. They don't try to understand their environment just solely to understand it. We seem to do that. We reason about our life situation. We reason about what we are and what we're here for. And so, for instance, Aristotle talked about us. We're animals in the sense that we have a soul that moves us around, but we're not like, you know, a dog or a cat or a horse or anything like that that also seems to have a soul. We have a type of soul that thinks and reasons and tries to understand. And so we are rational animals, if I could put it that way. So when we're talking about virtues and habits and characteristics to achieve our purpose as those, then if we are rational creatures, well, the virtues that we need to have are those that help us become rational. And so Cicero lists a couple of them, for instance, like prudence, you know, judgment, you know, wisdom, for lack of a better term, eagerness to learn. And all these things are sort of helpful for helping us to be rational creatures. Well, those list of virtues that we have there, for instance, like prudence and judgment and wisdom, are also the kind of things that are important for defending the faith. Again, I've kind of mentioned before, you know, the older you get, the more prudent you get on how to engage a conversation, how to read another person, knowing how to respond to objections, knowing what are objections and what are sort of to the faith and what are sort of distractions, for lack of a better term. You know, you develop that sense of prudence on being able to judge that situation quite well. And so what does that do? It helps you become better at using your rational capacity, that virtue of prudence. Same thing with wisdom. You acquire that through experience and using your rational capacity. And so these are the very same things that are helpful for defending the faith. And that's what I find interesting about Cicero's work. I mean, in this idea of virtue as habits or character traits to achieve our purpose, it has a way of drawing every bit of our life together into one single image. It doesn't compartmentalize, you know, for instance, our, you know, the way our body functions to how we should act to building machines or any, no, it, all these things, if a human touches anything out there in society, there's a virtue attached to it that's going to be tied to our purpose. And so having this idea of virtuous habits to help us achieve our purpose, it goes to show you that, for instance, ethics, apologetics, the way we live the Christian faith, theology, science, everything that humans are involved in, or that, or I should say, involves humans, are in a way connected with one another. So this gets back to my point about how I think ethics and apologetics are tied together. You know, the virtues in an ethical conversation, virtues help you become effective at living. Well, apologetics is supposed to flow out of our lifestyle. It shouldn't just be a purely intellectual exercise. And if that's the case and it flows out of the new creation we now are because of Christ, then the virtues that help us to become better human beings will, I just think, help us become also better apologists. So anyway, that's what I mean by, saying that the virtues that we need to age well are the same as the virtues that we need to defend the faith. It goes back to many times what you may hear in church about how, you know, you shouldn't just profess Christianity with your mouth. You should also live it with your lifestyle. That's just a nice way of saying that those two things shouldn't be separated from one another, that what you profess and how you live are really should be one and the same thing. I mean, we shouldn't even have to say what we profess and what we live can even be thought of as different. It should be that the my views about Christ, my views about the Bible, and what God has said to be the case does inform how I live. And same thing with defending the faith. If I'm going to defend the faith, I mean, it's the faith that I actually live. I'm not just trying to win an argument. I'm trying to help another person flourish and become the human being that God has designed him or her to be.
So Cicero talks about that the way to prepare for old age is when people are young. So how young? I mean, I think when we're young, we think a few years above us is so old. So when should a person start preparing for old age? What does that look like? I mean, how do you really encourage people to think about the long term? I really like that quote from Friedrich Nietzsche that I know that Eugene Peterson used about the idea of a long obedience in the same direction in terms of Christians, you know, a life that's been faithfully lived over a long period of time. So how should we start thinking about that? And when is too young to start thinking about that?
Yeah. If you ask me to put an age on it, I don't know if I can do that. But I would say as soon as possible. I would think as soon as you're a Christian, this is difficult to say because when you become a new Christian, there's so many things you don't know and so many things you need to learn. And but immediately it should be the case that you start preparing for the life you're going to have for eternity. Well, that, I mean, in a way, you're preparing for old age when you say it like that. I mean, you're preparing for all stages of your life. So yeah, I would say as soon as possible, you should do this. Now, this, I mean, how could a young person, especially a brand new convert in the faith, ever, you know this? I mean, this isn't one of the selling points of Christianity, you know, that we have. Maybe it should be, but it's not. It could be that this tells us that we need to start doing a better job at discipling our young people, that especially older people, that they know what old age is like. They know what the problems of old age are and also the joys of old age. And so perhaps, I know this is a novel idea, but I actually do get this out of the Bible. The older people are teaching the younger people. And I don't mean just, you know, people that are just slightly older than us. I mean the older people, the kind of people Cicero's talking about. They're in their 60s and 70s. Notice that goes back to kind of what I said about Christians not retiring. I mean, at the very least, even if you retire from a job, if you're a Christian, I think you have an obligation, a responsibility, and I would hope a joy in training young people. I mean, you have so much experience as an older person to bring to the table and all this wisdom and prudence that you hopefully have acquired over the years to help them. Now, of course, you know how young people are. Young people are ambitious. You know, they're brash. They tend to have to make mistakes before they'll listen to good advice. But that shouldn't deter an older person either. So it may be that the older person is needed to teach the younger person to start preparing for old age and sort of get them to see this. And that takes time. So that's what I would say. How young should you be? I would say as soon as possible, get started on preparing for old age. Because it may be that you won't ever become old, but you don't know what your life is going to be like. You don't know if you don't know if Christ is coming back. You don't know if something tragic may happen to you. You don't know if you'll have a nice long life into your hundreds. It seems to me that what you should prepare for is the latter, the nice life all the way into your hundreds. Prepare for that life. But, and even still, if we're talking about virtues as habits, I mean, you kind of mentioned Nietzsche's quote there. I mean, habits take time. I mean, ask any athlete. Athletes will tell you that I have to do the same thing over and over and over again so that when game time comes, it just happens. I'm a big baseball guy, and so I like to, I watch a lot of baseball. So anyway, one of the things I see them out there doing every now and then before they, for the guys start playing, is they'll do calisthenic exercise. And they'll do little crazy things like, there was a name for this and I can't remember it now, but they'll do shuffle steps out there and they'll try to run backwards and they'll kind of cross their legs over one another and move down the field sideways. We all know they're not doing that because that's what you do in the game. The game is not about running backwards. The game is not about running sideways or anything like that. But they do those kind of things to train their body so that when, in a split second, a ball is hit at them, their body will respond as it's supposed to get the ball and then, throw the guy out. Or in the case of the guy hitting, he'll get up there and swing the same way over and over again, trying to develop a good swing so that when game time comes, it just kind of happens. But he has to work on that in practice. Well, that takes a long time to do, and every athlete knows this. Well, virtues are the same way. The only way you're going to be able to acquire a virtue as a habit is if you just do it over and over and over and over and over again. And that takes time. And so the longer you have to work on that virtue, well, the better that habit and that skill is going to be when you're older. So all things being equal, if you are 23 years old and you're thinking, man, I need to start thinking about old age now. I don't need to be, drawn to all the glamour and the glitz that we see in our society that just glorifies youth. And I need to be thinking about what it means to be old. Well, then that's good. You should, if you're starting to practice from that age, as opposed to if you're starting when you're 42, all things being equal, you'll have a lot easier time. The 23-year-old have a lot easier time when he becomes older, being older and being effective as an older person. And as an apologist, being an effective apologist, than say someone who's starting kind of late. Again, healthcare professionals will tell you this too. And I think I mentioned this in my heart very briefly. One of the things they tell you, and I'm starting to hear this now too, hey, you're getting to a certain age. You need to start thinking about a regular exercise routine. You need to stop eating that. You need to start eating this. And I hate hearing all that stuff. But they're trying to, a healthcare professional is trying to tell you, if you want to, enjoy your old age, you must prepare the body now for it, because the body is going to run down. But there are things, and even Cicero says, there are things you can do to delay that process, to resist the sort of encroachments of old age upon you and the decay of the body. But you have to do that when you're younger. And if you don't do it when you're younger, you're certainly not just going to one day wake up and do it when you're older. That's the other thing about habits. You just don't develop a habit overnight, and you can't, after you've had a lifestyle of bad habits, undo a bad habit and then do the good habit to somehow mitigate any negative things that you're now experiencing. In fact, Cicero doesn't quite say it like this, but you immediately pick up that it's when you're old, it's already too late to prepare for old age. So if you're going to be well prepared for when you're old, you have to do it when you're young. And that means that, as you kind of mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, that, we have to ignore a lot of the frivolous things that we see out there in our culture that glamorizes youth. We have to recognize that that isn't the end of things, that, that isn't what our life is going to be like at all stages. I mean, eventually we're going to get old. And if we're going to do it well, we better, get out of our minds now the idea that, well, I got to stay as young as I can. I've got to somehow capture all the glamour of youth and keep that as long as I can, because one day it'll be gone and then I'll have nothing left. No, I mean, all that's fleeting anyway. What is more enduring? In fact, what Cicero sort of really highlights in here, what is the pleasure of old age that you get? Well, there's all kinds of different pleasures, but the crowning achievement is influence. I think there's nothing more, if I can use the word glamorous, about old age than being the kind of person that people want to line up at your door to hear what sage advice you have. But again, that's not the kind of person that just, you can't live a lifestyle of glamorizing youth and then expect to be that person when you're old. That takes a lifetime of practice to get to that point. And I think that's what God wants to happen, especially in the church. He wants the older generation to be the source of wisdom for the younger generation. And especially it ought to be the case that the older generation models what good apologetics looks like for the younger generation.
Well, actually, that your ending comments reminds me of a recent blog post that I saw that was kind of being passed around on social media that I saw. And it was a lady who had gone to a conference, and there were two teachers teaching at this conference. One was an older lady who was in her 80s, and one was a younger girl or younger gal, younger teacher. And both of them had such different approaches. I mean, one woman, the older woman, was really focused on the time that she took that was she was teaching on the word. She talked about the gospel. She focused on Christ, the person of Christ. And then when the younger teacher got up, they're both well-known writers, I guess. You know, she was cracking all these jokes and not just talking about herself a lot. And then at the end of the conference, they had like book tables. So there was this older woman here who had given all this godly advice, and she didn't have a line at her table. And then the younger woman had this huge banner of herself, you know, a picture of herself and all of her books. And she was taking selfies with everybody that lined up at her table. And just, it was just a contrast for this person who was attending the conference between the younger person who was just so caught up in the glamour of being, you know, a social media influencer, even though she was a Christian writer, and then the person who was in her 80s who was focused on Christ, and just to see the contrast between what people were drawn to. And just the fact that she wanted to be the older woman when she got older, because she's younger. And I think that's really true. The person that's focusing, has a big poster of herself and focusing on selfies with some of her readers, I don't know what that person is going to be like when they're in their 80s, as opposed to this other woman who seemed like she had a lifetime of walking with the Lord and focusing on Christ and telling other people about Christ. So I think those are good reminders for all of us as we live our lives, no matter what age we are right now. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Stephen. So Stephen, it's officially fall. So pumpkin spice latte, yes or pass?
Well, yeah, I like that. So yes, if you don't give me another option, yes, pumpkin spice latte.
Are you an introvert or extrovert?
Depends on the time of the day. I think generally most people say I'm an introvert.
Early bird or night owl?
I want to be an early bird, but I find myself inclined to be a night owl. And I don't like that, but I also have met other people that I really respect that are night owls, and I have a prejudice for getting up early, and that might go back to the fact that I was raised in the country, and that's kind of what's expected when you're raised out in a rural area.
And tell us something that's on your bucket list.
On my bucket list? I haven't thought about this in a while. Man, that's a good question. I would like to perhaps go to the Vatican, and not for the reasons of most people go to the Vatican. And I know this will never happen, but I would love to go to the Vatican just to see their library. I've heard stories, you know, the kind of legends you hear about what they have in those archives. I just love to see it, but I just know that'll never happen.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, that's
well,
true.
Thanks for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for the invite. Thank you for the opportunity to write for your publication.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Dr. Stephen Mizell of Scarborough College, and he's written an online exclusive feature article for us, and it's called On Being an Old Apologist, Reflections on Cicero's On Old Age, and you can read it for free at our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.